All right. Happy April, everyone. Cruise ship's coming in soon.
Yay!
Yeah, in April.
Soon-ish.
No April Fools. I call this meeting the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 9:08 a.m. on Wednesday, April 1, 2026. Present today are Representative Allard, Representative Stapp, Representative Moore, Representative Bynum, Representative Hannon, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Galvin, Representative Jimmy, Co-Chair Shiragi, and myself, Co-Chair Josephson, and also Co-Chair Foster, meaning we are fully situated here on the committee with 11 members. Also present today are House Finance Committee staff, Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Tallulah-Lastufka, Secretary Bree Wiley, Secretary Leah Frazier, and our moderator, Doug Bridges, from the Legislative Information Office. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. In today's meeting, one of three, we will continue to take up amendments to House Bill 263 and House Bill 265 of the operating and mental health budgets. Our plan is to go until 10 a.m. We will continue to take up amendments at the 1:30 meeting this afternoon. If there are no questions, we'll get started. The next amendment before us is Amendment 48, the first Department of Corrections amendment in the numbers packet. And with that, I turn to Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I move Amendment 48.
Right. I'll object for discussion. Please describe your amendment.
Amendment 48 adds $5,590,600 to the component that is called population management. The allocation is regional and community jails, and it would add that amount of money to the funding request from the 14 community jails. Those community jails are operated by municipal governments in correlation with the Department of Corrections. They appear in the Department of Corrections budget, but they are not Department of Corrections facilities in total. Local governments play a substantial role in making sure that when someone is arrested by, say, the Alaska State Troopers, there is some place to house them until they can remand them into the custody of Department of Corrections or prior to their first court hearing in a regional court facility. As the state has reduced costs, as the state has reduced that partnership, the escalating costs at the community level has become the burden of local governments. And in some cases, local governments, without additional state funding, potentially would close their community jails, and then they would become the complete cost to bear their housing expenses to the state. They are largely used at initial arrest, not as sentenced or facilities. So that burden would appear largely in the Department of Public Safety's budget versus the Department of Corrections budget.
Okay. Representative Stapp, Amendment 48.
Yeah. Thank you, Co-Chair Justin. I'm going to be opposed to Amendment 48. I think community jails are valuable, but I mean, this is another $5.5 million add to the corrections budget. Be nice if there were somewhere else in the corrections budget that you could take it from and put it into community jails, because the correction budget continues to increase exponentially. So, thanks.
Okay. Representative Allard.
Thank you. I'm going to be no to this amendment. The local government needs to assume responsibility and budget accordingly. When there are state individuals in there that are within state custody, I believe that the state does pick up the bill for that particular individual, but otherwise I'm a strong no on this. We keep increasing the budget where we don't need to. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I'm going to stand here and say I fully support this Amendment 48 by the representative from Juneau. We do have a lack of community holding cells for people when a crime is committed. They don't have a facility to be at. Sometimes they have no choice but to be at the village police safety officer's home, or if not, there's not. Or if anything, when a crime is committed and there's no public safety, no public safety building, arrests do not happen, people do not get held accountable, and then of course this has a tumbling effect within the community, and we've had two fire fatalities where the holding cell caught on fire because of poor infrastructure. And this is important to add to the this amendment is important because even though crimes committed or somebody needs somewhere safe to go, every community needs somewhere to be held until they can find help or go wait for their court. So I fully support this. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Thank you, Representative Hannon, for your amendment. Do you have a list? I guess I'm not familiar with all the locations that these community jails are. Do you have a list and kind of maybe do you have any descriptions of any of them? Thank you.
Representative Hannon, I can help with some of them, please.
The community jails are listed. One is called Bristol Bay Community Jail. It's in Naknek, Cordova, Craig, Dillingham, Haynes, Homer, Kodiak, Kotzebue. The North Slope Boroughs is in Ugyagvik, Petersburg, Sitka, Unalaska, Valdez, and Wrangell. They are all in locations where there is a local government that has a police department. That's sort of one of the parameters. That's where the 14 community jails are.
Follow up, Rep. Tomaszewski.
And so do you know how much – is this in addition to funding that they already are getting, or is this a new line item, or where does this – where does this fall as far as how much they're getting now?
Rep. Hannon, and we have lifelines.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don't want to do the math before I've had enough coffee. The total request for the community jails was $14.5 million. It was partially funded at the subcommittee level. And again, and it's, you know, there's a lot of growth in the Department of Corrections, and the subcommittee chose not to fully fund this component, but this is not the Department of Corrections. So we put about $9 million in. This is the remainder from the community jails. I'll use the term make them whole. They would not use that term. The community jails would not, because in most cases, that's just returning to what they were funded at in the previous fiscal year. But in many cases, that is not fully funded.
And one more.
Yes, of course. Rep. Tomaszewski.
And during the subcommittee process, was there any reason given or discussion on why they didn't go for the 14.5 and went for the $9 million ad instead?
Good question. Rep. Hannon.
Largely, thank you, Chair Josephson. I would say there wasn't that much discussion about why not to fund them fully. It was that there were so many other large growths in the Department of Corrections, and that's where the subcommittee focused. So when it came to that amount, and again, not to disparage the Department of Corrections, but they're fighting for their agency budget, and they said this is the request for community jails, but when the subcommittee came up with the $9 million, it didn't say, well, the community jails problem is if we don't fund them, they go away, because they're not part of the Department of Corrections. They're local government operated jails.
Okay, thank you.
So Rep. Hannon, let me ask you something. Representative Vallard said that, or implied that these were, as I understood it, and I'm paraphrasing, but that they were sort of local problems because they're local crimes. But my understanding is that, for example, the city of Craig, I doubt it has a list of misdemeanors that it charges. I know that Anchorage does under Municipal Ordinance 8, Title 8. Juneau has its own prosecutor for misdemeanors. But I think most of the offenders are not in these local jails because of a local offense. Am I right about that?
Thank you, Chair Josephson. That would be my understanding, because largely you're not going to hold someone in jail for a misdemeanor offense like shoplifting. My community, Juneau, your community, Anchorage, have the luxury of having a state integrated jail prison located there. So when the Juneau Police Department arrests someone for a DUI, they're placed in the state facility.
Right.
When that happens in Unalaska, they're transported to the Unalaska community jail. Now, one of the other questions that Representative Tomaszewski asked is, what do they look like? Well, these, they range from everything like a, and I know that Representative Stapp described one, where it might be a building that has the city manager's office in the front and the police dispatcher in the back and the fire hall attached, and then three holding cells. So they are wide ranging.
I guess my point was, it's more than just that the city wouldn't hold someone on a minor misdemeanor. It's that they don't have a criminal code. They have no charges of their own. So de facto, when they're held on a state offense, that they're doing a favor for the state government. That's my understanding.
Yes.
Other comments, Representative Bynum, then Allard.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. You know, I completely understand the desire to want to have downward pressure on the budget. This one is definitely a challenging topic when we talk about having additional spends. I do, however, see that there is a need here. I have several of these in my region, and one in my district. Specifically, I'll speak to Wrangell. I've been to Wrangell. I've been to that facility. It is a multi-use facility, but they do have dedicated space specifically for jail and dispatch. And those, we've thought a lot about, well, they already have a facility, so therefore there isn't cost to that. And that isn't the case. There is cost to having those facilities and making sure that they're to proper standards and that they actually have the safety mechanisms in place to ensure that when we are putting prisoners or people that are incarcerated into those locations, that the state has access to those facilities for the purpose of detaining and holding people, not just on local crimes, but on state crimes. And so I know the troopers are in Wrangell, for example, are very involved with the activities there and in coordination with the local police department. And I don't see that it's inappropriate for us to be having a focus on these types of facilities and ensuring that they have the resources necessary to provide the services the state needs. So, again, like I said, I understand the downward pressure on the budget. This will be a particular item that I will be supporting.
Thank Representative you. Allard.
I'm not in a good mood today, but after that comment I just heard, I'm a little bit lit. So no, I don't have a comment.
All right. Representative Tomaszewski.
Yeah, just another quick question. So of these 14 community jails, do we know how the funding is split up? Is it just equally dispensed into each of the communities, or is there some sort of variable factor that in the way it's distributed?
Chair Josephson, there is a formula, and now if you're asking what that formula is, I'm going to need to call a lifeline.
Do we have a DOC specialist from our wonderful legislative finance team? Or a utility player? Yeah.
For the record, Connor Bell, Legislative Finance Division. Through the chair, the contracts for community and regional jails were previously paid out based on a proportion of their total request. The department has been developing an alternative model where a portion of the distribution will be based on the actual number of inmates at the regional community jails that is currently in development, and I believe that will be put in place beginning next year.
Okay, thank you. And just a quick comment. I've just looked at the $14.5 million request. I see there's 14 facilities. I figured if everybody gets $1 million, but divided up now without the ad, you're looking at about almost $700,000 per facility. And I was just, you know, questioning that, wondering if there is a formula, but I guess they're working on it is what I hear. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I don't see other hands, so we'll go to Rep. Hannon in closing. Thank you, Mr. Bill.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. And I just, it is having community jails is an important piece of our overall public safety system. We're going to get into a bunch of other amendments that deal with the Department of Corrections, and I'd urge your support to understand that the having secure facilities in further reaching parts of Alaska is important to our overall public safety system, and I'd urge your support.
Okay. Is the objection maintained? If it was mine, I'd remove it.
Check.
Still objections. Would the clerk call the roll as to the Amendment 48?
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Bynum.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Jimmy.
Yes.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Moore.
No.
Representative Allard.
No.
Representative Schrage.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
7 yea, 4 nay.
By a vote of 7-4, committee adopts Amendment 48 to the budget. We'll go to Amendment 49. Rep. Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Amendment 49 and 50 are duplicative of 48, so I will not be offering those.
Understood. Taking us to 51, Representative Jimmy.
I move Amendment 51.
I'll object for discussion. Representative Jimmy.
This amendment denies the Department of Corrections requests for $20 million in personal service. Year over year, the Department of Corrections asked us for more and more money. If we tell them no when we're planning ahead, they go behind our backs. They overspent and tell us that they need more money for last year's budget. The Department of Corrections general fund budget has gone up an average of 5.5% each year for the last 10 years. This is just too much. Alaskans have to live within our means. So does the Department of Corrections.
Okay. Comments. Rep. Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Josephson, and I'm going to speak in opposition to this amendment. And again, I wish that this was not a department that had such an escalating budget, but I think that I need to affirm and remind members that they don't create policies and they don't get decisions about who they serve, when they serve them, or how they deliver their services. This budget has been growing, but whether we want it to or not, it is policies that we have put in place that are keeping people in prison for other offenses, keeping them longer, and the cost of serving incarcerated individuals is expensive. We are mandated by law, federal and state, to feed them, house them, and make sure that circumstances that they are in are secure. And those are expensive things to do. And yes, their budget has a $20 million supplemental that is now rolled into the base because we are incarcerating Alaskans at a very high rate. And unless we change and start doing things that do not place people in incarceration, do not remand them when they have small technical violations on pretrial release, our corrections budget will continue to grow. But we have not invested in any upstream programs that prevent that. And once someone is incarcerated, the cost of holding them there is our burden to bear. And I wish that it was a declining budget, and I think most of the people who work there also wish it was a declining budget, but it is not. So I will oppose this amendment.
Rep. Galvin.
Thank you, Chair Justice. I hesitantly am going to be a no vote on this, and I say hesitantly because I do think that it's important that we note that it's an aging population in the prisons right now. So they do have a higher cost of healthcare. It's irrefutable. And healthcare has to happen, as you've heard already from Representative Hannon. But I do think that there are some changes that could be made, and I want to put that on record. I think that we know that the transportation costs, for example, not only to healthcare, but also to the court system. So when anyone from the prison needs to be transported, it's oftentimes with one or two people with them, and that can be very, very expensive as opposed to doing more innovative ways like we did during COVID times where they were offered opportunities online to do both of those cares, both of those, not just the court system, but also healthcare was offered differently. And so I wish we would pay more attention, and the overtime also is inordinate. And we know that they, at least when I had visited the prisons, a year and a half ago, what I heard was they got a lot of applications, but they weren't taking all of the applicants in. And I think that there may be some things that we need to help them with, perhaps on the recruitment retention. But I just wanted to mention that I do want to send a message. I'm saying it right here. I think that there are some things we should be doing that would be more efficient. I also think that the parole system, Alaska, is absolutely holding on to folks beyond what they need to hold them on to. And the parole board is, I think the data shows that we are extending parole opportunities less than any other state. And that means that we're holding prisoners longer than other states. We certainly are incarcerating them longer. You already heard, or incarcerating them as well at the beginning of their process. So I think that there's a lot that should be done to lower our costs. And that said, I also know that we have to meet our responsibilities at keeping them safe and with healthcare. So for now, I think I have to vote no to this.
Rep. Allard, Stapp, then Moore.
Thank you. I'm kind of confused on some of this. We had a $5.5 million ad that people were voting on, and now we have a $20 million decrement as a cut. I don't know what kind of message that's sending the community or Department of Corrections, but I'm a solid yes on this. Thank you for bringing this one forward. Thank you.
Okay. Rep. Jimmy brought it forward.
Yeah.
Rep. Stapp.
Well, thank you, Co-Chair Justin. I'm going to be a yes on this. We talk about corrections. People say things. They keep doing it. Nothing happens. So, obviously, statutorily, you should make changes. There's lots of, I think, changes that people know they should make. One of the most effective things we can do is start shipping these folks out of state again. But until we make some fundamental changes to the corrections, I'm going to stand against their willful cost overruns, which they are due every single year, and be in favor of this.
Thank you. Rep. Moore.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I'm in support of this amendment. This is for the public that's watching. This is for personal services and overtime, not more inmates that are being locked away. This is not a request for beds, food, other impacts from increased inmate housing. DOC has a staffing and scheduling issue, and they need to resolve it. As we stated in the statewide single audit, the department should work to stay within its budget. So I will be a yes vote on this.
Okay, interesting. Rep. Foster.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. I also want to see reductions to our budget, and so I commend Representative Jimmy for putting something forward for us to debate and have for us you know, just try to think outside the box and keep the downward pressure on. I also have a prison in Nome, and I do want to align myself with the comments from the member from Juneau, Representative Hannon. I agree that the prisons, they don't have, you know, a say. They don't have, you know, in terms of how many prisoners come into their facility. But also with regard to staffing, scheduling, overtime, in the past they have asked for recruitment and retention tools. And without those, they just can't hire more folks. And so I sympathize with them. And so I'll be a no on this amendment. Thanks.
Rep Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Through the chair, my question would be for Representative Moore, I guess. Is this substantially similar or the same as the amendment that you have coming next?
Rep Moore.
It would align with this. Yes, this would be a decrement for – the next one coming would be a decrement.
So they're identical amendment.
Basically, thank yes.
you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tough call. I mean, probably around 10:45, a bill that increases penalties for hit and run driving, felonious hit and run driving, is going to pass, and it's probably going to pass easily. So this goes to the point Rep Hannon is making. I bet that's a 35-5 vote, but that's just what my tea leaves say. Any other comments? I don't see any. Rep Jimmy in closing.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I appreciate everyone's discussion on this matter, and it is a very important one because over the last 10 years, 5.5% every year is a lot. We're funds can go elsewhere. I was in Bethel last week and my staff happened to, well, I had to go on standby and then my chief of staff didn't even have room, so she had to wait and she went back to the LIO to go help. And of course, right then and there, she found out that a mother was there, a wife, was afraid to fill out her own son and husband's PFD because they were in prison. And they were eligible, but nobody was seen to help them. So, and they're still eligible. And she was able to deliver it to the prison, but the state isn't. And we're not making our jails and prisons work for our people. And I was for this amendment until I heard the member from Fairbanks say, let's ship them out of state. And we know, like, when you're shipped out of state and you're far away from your home, that's even a worse way to go. Even for treatment, you don't do as well. I just don't like the idea of shipping people somewhere else. But I do want us to realize that we do need to make the corrections aware of their spending. So I will withdraw this amendment at this time.
Movers. All right. The amendment 51 has just been withdrawn by its sponsor. So we'll go to amendment 52, Representative Moore.
I move amendment 52.
Okay. There's an objection. I think we can do this pretty fast, but quick. Rep Moore.
Thank you, Co-Chair. This amendment would reduce the Department of Corrections personal service costs for correctional facilities and inmate transportation to FY26 levels. DOC repeatedly comes to the finance table asking for additional funds, and it has been happening for several years. This amendment would put a stop to that increase in funds and ask the department to stay and work within their budget.
Further comments? Rep Stapp?
Yeah, I just hope we can cut something out of this massive budget. Thanks.
Rep Moore, you're welcome to make a statement, but maybe it relates to that. Okay.
I think we're good to go.
Will the clerk call the roll on Amendment 52, please?
Representative Allard.
Yes.
Representative Galvin.
No.
Representative Jimmy.
No.
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Bynum.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Schrage.
No.
Representative Josephson.
No.
5 yay, 6 nay.
By a vote of 5-6, the committee does not adopt 52, taking us to Amendment 53. Representative Jimmy.
I move Amendment 53.
I'll object. Representative Jimmy.
Like with Amendment 51, the Department of Corrections spends more and more every year. It's time we put a stop to it. This amendment tells me that the legislator is serious when we've given them a budget.
Can you repeat that last sentence?
This amendment tells me that we're serious to pass a budget.
Okay.
To give them a budget. I'm sorry. Excuse me.
Is this, Representative Jimmy, this is... this relates to an agreement reached between the union and the department? Is that?
Yes.
Can I get a signal from someone? Okay. Yeah. All right. Comments? Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. This particular amendment, I am for wanting to see us have savings in the budget. However, this item is for cost of living adjustments within the department, and I don't know that that taking away people's pay is the right way for us to approach reductions, especially one of this type. I do believe that or this is not adjusting for overtime or mismanagement of staff time or perceived mismanagement of staff time. Make that correction. This is a cost of living adjustment. I will be a no vote.
Okay. Anyone else wish to speak? Not required. Representative Allard.
I just have a couple of questions to the maker of this amendment. If there's a union negotiation and we're going to cut COLA, but we're having a hard time retaining, did you speak to anybody within DOC or in regards to being that this might be a union violation or anything? I'm just curious because I don't know that we can just arbitrarily cut in a union contract.
I believe their budget can absorb, and we did talk with legal.
Hey, that was Rep. Jimmy speaking last.
Oh, I'm sorry, Co-Chair. I'm sorry. My apologies.
That's okay.
Can I?
Yes, Rep. Allard.
when you spoke to legal said it was okay to violate or to negotiate or renegotiate or take from their union contract?
Rep. Jimmy.
It wouldn't void the contract. It would just send them back to the talking table.
Okay.
Rep. Allard.
Thank you. Thank you, Co-Chair. I like the cuts, but I don't know if cutting income to our DOC employees is a good avenue. We're having a really hard time recruiting and getting them on board. So I can't do a salary cut or income or COLA cut. Thank you.
Rep. Stapp.
Yeah, I mean, I wish we had just passed the last one. So this is a COLA adjustment that rejects. I like the idea of the cut. I just, it's a collective bargaining agreement. And, typically we don't go in and violate those. I think I've made the argument that we shouldn't put money in to, like, try to incentivize them. So I wouldn't want to take money out to violate the agreements. So I'm going to be a no.
Others? I don't see any. So we'll go to, Rep. Tomaszewski.
Thank you. Thank you, Co-Chair. Is there a total on? I mean, this seems like it's a pretty wide, sweeping, multi-page amendment here. What is the total number that we are decrementing here? And has this ever... Is there any precedent for removing the COLA adjustments from a union contract? I don't know if we have anyone in the room that can speak on that, Co-Chair.
I suspect we do. and so I'll invite Director Painter.
Thank you.
Good morning, Director.
Here, Mr. Chairman, for the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. For the first question about the total of the amendment, it is about $8.8 million based on these were the COLAs added in the governor's March 13th amendments. And the legislature, so the second question through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, about whether the legislature has denied a COLA before. It has, but I'm trying to remember, I think the last time that happened was in the 1990s. At that point, the legislature preemptively denied one that was being negotiated, a certain provision. Before that, it had been, I think, the early 1990s, or maybe it was the late 80s, there was a case that ended up going to the state Supreme Court that established sort of the rules about what happens when the legislature denies it. And in that case, the legislature had denied funding for a University of Alaska COLA for some of their employees. So it has happened before, but it's not in the last couple of decades.
Okay, thank you. And just to follow up, what is the result of it happening? What's the next thing?
Mr. Chairman, so in this case, this is an interest arbitration result where they were specifically, they went back to the bargaining table just for COLA, not for the entire contract. I'd probably defer to legislative legal about whether this is different than normal. Generally, if we deny a contract, it sends the parties back to the negotiating table. I'm unsure if because this was an interest arbitration example, whether this would only send them back to interest arbitration on COLA or whether it would do something to the entire contract. I think it might be the former where it would just be the COLA because it's a specific provision, but that would be better directed to legislative legal.
Okay. Rep Allard.
You asked that follow-up, and I just wanted to know what came of that particular issue. Thank you.
Anything more to add?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right. Rep. Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I just want to thank the maker again for this amendment to again call out that we have a problem in DOC. I'm not sure that this is a fix. It may be creating a bit more of a problem because of our recruitment retention problems and how, you know, this would be taking away what is one more perk along with maybe defined benefits and other things that they could be using in order to fully staff so that we're not paying so much overtime. And so because of that, I'll be a no vote, but I really do appreciate this amendment. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to go to Rep. Jimmy in closing.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Justin. cost of living adjustments. I see this as where you work in public safety, whether you're in rural or urban, if you can't have the same pay in equality, I don't think it's fair. So I think we need to start having equality for pay for anybody in the public safety area.
Okay. Thank you. With that, we'll call the roll on Amendment 53. Madam Clerk.
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Allard.
No.
Representative Moore.
No.
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative Jimmy.
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski. Representative Galvin.
No.
Representative Bynum.
No.
Representative Schrage.
No.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Josephson.
No.
1 yay, 10 nay.
By a vote of 1-10, the committee does not adopt 53. Taking us to the first numbers amendment in Department of Education. Representative Jimmy.
I move Amendment 54.
I'll object. Representative Jimmy, please discuss your amendment.
This amendment fully cuts funding for the Student Information System and Predictive Data Dashboard. Okay. Representative Galvin removed half of its funding because DEED spent $2.7 million on this dashboard in 3 years. We still haven't seen what it does. We've wasted enough time and money on this project. Let's not waste any more.
Okay. I still hear the word dashboard and think of my father's Chevy Impala. So Representative Galvin.
Thank you. I am going to again commend my colleague for calling out the attention of the frustration that we're not seeing a deliverable yet. And it has been more than 2 years since the department has been receiving funds. I have already, in the subcommittee work, we have removed half of their funding, sending a message that we would like to see some work done. And the reason I am going to oppose this amendment is that I think removing all of the funding may stop the work completely. And I'm going to give you a little bit of background about what this work was intended for. This is part of the REEDS Act. So this came out of the REEDS Act as a way to help inform the public and schools about what was happening with the data on school achievement based on the Act and all of the ways that our students were supposed to be getting their assistance to become readers. And I did not attend. I know that just this week there was a hearing about the dashboard, and I apologize. I was here instead of listening to that, and I didn't get to it late last night. But it has this week, apparently, they have been reporting to the Senate side. The other body has been hearing about what the progress is. And I guess my point is I am fine with where we were with the subcommittee, where we did remove half of their budget to send a really strong message. But I'm afraid that removing all of it may be a bit draconian, and we may then stop what we have in statute, which is to make sure that there is some accountability measures in the REEDS Act.
Rep. Galvin, because I don't look at this dashboard, if I were a parent or a student, I'm not sure who looks at it, what would I see and what does it tell me?
You would see nothing as far as I saw back when I was running this, because they didn't have it up yet. What they are working on is collecting the data and then putting that into a user-friendly dashboard. So this is, I know the commissioner has been working on it. They have, I think, at least one IT, maybe two technicians working on it, collecting the data. So to my knowledge, now again, I've missed this week's presentation, and so I hope that there's more. But right now, there's a lot of dashboard information that assessments and such that they've had previously, but there isn't anything new yet that I've seen based on these funds. So again, I'm prematurely speaking and may not be giving you the full report, but that's what it would look like, though, is you would go on and you would say Anchorage, and you would look up first graders, and you would see these schools are doing this well, and maybe here are their areas of weaknesses. And then you would know, or presumably we would know as parents or as educators, where we need to focus then, or as legislators, where we need to focus the funding to help better ensure that every child is with the literacy skills that we all intended through the REEDS Act.
And if someone on this panel could tell me if this was a fiscal note connected to the REEDS Act. So the REEDS Act, in Title 14, I'd find the words data dashboard, or I'd find a fiscal, there was a plan. It sounds like there was.
It may be a good question, pardon me, Chair Josephson, it may be a good question for Leg Finance. They may know whether it is in there. I believe it may be, and it would be worthy probably to hear from an expert who has been studying the budget.
Okay, I want the Leg Finance team to contemplate helping us, but I'm going to go through some questions here. Rep. Moore, Shragi, and Allard.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Just for clarification from the maker of the amendment, we've spent $2.7 million on the dashboard over 3 years. Can we access this dashboard and go on? Are we still just working on improving it, and we can jump on and go look at it? Or do we have no access to it at all after that much money has been spent?
No, it's in the blank.
No, it's in the...
It's blank.
Okay. That was Rep. Jimmy.
Wow.
Dialoguing okay. with Rep. Moore.
Thank you for that.
So, Co-Chair Shiragi.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I'm struggling a little bit because I don't have intimate familiarity with this dashboard and the work of the subcommittee. I will say that just on a personal level, it is very frustrating to see the number of dashboard projects, IT projects, other system implementation projects that just consistently overrun costs, and not just overrun costs, but do so substantially. I also am conflicted because I, too, like other members of this committee, would like to find some cuts through this process that we can entertain. I think where I am right now, and I want to listen to the rest of the committee discussion, but where I am right now is I'm probably going to lean towards supporting the cut and to have the department come back and justify why they should get that money back in the budget in the other body if they feel that it's worth fighting for and they feel they can actually get this delivered so that people can utilize the dashboard. I'd like to force them to come to the table and justify this and not put the money in and hope that they're going to get it done. So I think for where I am right now, tentatively in support, but looking forward to any further committee discussion. Thank you.
Rep. Allard.
Miracles. Representative Shiragi and I are agreeing once again. So on this one, I will tell you that I did speak to the Department of Education, and that's a fine to cut this. And I think we need to cut it. So if they're in support of it, we should be in support of it. And then they could come back to the table and tell us if they need that funds back. So I am going to support this amendment. Thank you for bringing it forward.
Does our trio of ledge fine, is there expertise back there? And while Mr. Bell is approaching, Rep. Galvin.
Thank you. Firstly, I wanted to say thank you to Representative Allard. I did not hear that information, and that helps me a lot. What I'm going to share is it was difficult for me to get response back from the department, but I did get something, and I want to make sure to read that for the record. To date, the vendor's primary responsibility is focused on establishing the foundational architecture for the project. This portion of the work is largely structural and does not produce a traditional standalone deliverable. So I ask, where's my deliverable? How come I can't see anything? It says, however, it is necessary to support future dashboard development. The deed access portal has been created. The portal will serve as single entry point, and there's a whole lot more, which I don't really want to waste your time. But if you're interested in more of this, I'm happy to share it with you. It gets into why it takes so much time. Like, before the dashboard is fully developed and deployed, data from these systems must be consolidated into the warehouse and so forth. It's a lot here, and I'm happy to have it copied for you. But I did not hear the same answer that Representative Allard heard, which is we could do without it. That was not at all what I heard. And so, again, I'm conflicted, frankly, because this is the first time I've heard we don't really need it. So I would like to hear from Ledge Finance. And like I said, I'll have this copied for all of you who know more about computer IT systems.
Okay. Actually, we're going to try and wrap this amendment up pretty quickly. But I see questions. Co-Chair Shiragi? Mr. Bell, can you tell us the inception of this? How did this come to be, if you know?
Chair Josephson, this was a FY24 increment for $900,000. It was not explicitly part of the REEDS Act fiscal note, though the justification for the increment was to track progress associated with the REEDS Act, though it was not directly in the fiscal note of the enacted bill.
Okay. Rep. Galvin.
Just some clarification, if possible. My understanding is that it was a multi-year increment and that it did refer to in the language the REEDS Act, but please correct me if I'm wrong.
Mr. Bell.
Through the chair to Representative Galvin, the item is a $900,000 base increment, so it is built into the base budget, and it was not explicitly part of the funding package or fiscal note package for the Alaska Reads Act. The department came back after the Reads Act was passed and put forward this request, saying with the intent that it would allow them to better track progress, including that progress associated with the Reads Act of student performance and attendance.
So your understanding, real briefly, is that it was not a legislator's ask. It was an administration ask that's now in the budget.
Representative Josephson, that is correct. The request was brought forward by the governor.
Okay. Co-Chair Schrock.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I think based on the document that Rep. Galvin provided us and read from and Mr. Bell's testimony, I think I'm firming up my support of this amendment. $900,000 into the base to develop better data transparency and accountability, and after 3 years of that, still not having something accessible to the public, that gives me a lot of concern. I understand they've been working on foundational architectural work in support of this dashboard, but I'd like to know how close we are to done with that step, because it sounds like then there's further steps to be taken to actually get that into a public-facing format. So I think I'm going to be in support of this. I will be in support of this amendment and look forward to having the department come back and justify this if they want it back in the budget at a later time in the process. Thank you.
Rep. Hannon, then Allard. Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Mr. Bell, by if this amendment passes, have we removed it from the base budget for DEED for the fiscal year and ongoing years?
Mr. Bell.
Through the chair to Representative Hannon, yes, that's correct. There is $900,000 of funding in the governor's base budget. $450,000 was removed in subcommittee, and this would remove the remaining $450,000. So there would be zero ongoing funding.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Rep. Hannon.
My criticism always of the Reads Act was how we were going to implement it and where we were going to focus on reading. And if we were spending $900,000 on working with kids who weren't reading, I'd be opposed to it. But this is data to prove we're potentially working on it, and I will support this amendment.
Rep. Allard.
Yeah, thank you. I think this is a gift to DEED. I think that why we could do this and make this cut, they have the ability to redirect those funds later when they come to the table and ask us to something better. So I'm truly in support of this amendment, and just a little bit, I know this is what they want, so I think we should move forward and support this amendment.
Rep. Jimmy, in closing.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. It would be great if they could show what they've done. But if I had staff and they couldn't produce anything, I would fire all of them. And we need to be smart about our money here right now. Because we can't even fund a full PFD. So, and from the people I've spoken to, they don't want a dashboard. Thanks.
Okay, will the clerk call the roll on Amendment 54?
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes.
Representative Allard.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Bynum.
Yes.
Representative Jimmy.
Yes.
Representative Schrage.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
11 yea, 0 nay.
The committee unanimously adopts Amendment 54. I should have just seen if there was further objection.
Is this the first cut?
We cut something. Yay. Yes.
We will adjourn this meeting. Our next meeting, I think, is at 1:30. Is that right, Mr. Schroeder? We're adjourned to the next meeting, which is at 1:30.